Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck and I'm your host for this first hour. Last weekend I spent a lot of time focused on the resource sector and a lot of the junior stocks in terms of especially precious metals. So on this weekend's show we're going to switch a little bit more for a generalist focus simply because in all fairness there are a lot of sectors that are moving sideways and are relatively boring, but the U.S. equity markets, they have bounced recently over the past week and a half, let's say. And there's also been this very interesting rotation. It's not just the high-flying tech stocks that are leading this bounce for the U.S. markets. I'm kicking off the show with Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. Jesse, let's start with this rotation in the stock market. What are you seeing here?
Well, yeah, I think that's what we're seeing in the stock market is trying to discount what the future is going to look like a year or 18 months from now. So, you know, one of my favorite investing quotes comes from Stan Druckenmiller, probably the greatest hedge fund manager in, you know, of our time. Said never invest in the present. You have to visualize the situation 18 months from now. Whatever that is, that's where the price will be, not where it is today. And so the market, you know, is right now trying to discount what things are going to look like a year, 18 months from now. And if you look at China, you know, China's probably a good example of where we're going to be a year or 18 months from now. In China, they've had no, you know, virus cases, COVID cases in the last, you know, couple of months. And they're seeing travel just open up like crazy. I mean, hotels are sold out. You can't get flights anywhere. All the tourist attractions are really going, you know, gangbusters again. And so, you know, if that's what things are going to look like, you know, 18 months from now, spring of 2022, I think there's probably a good chance by then that we've actually gotten through this pandemic to the other side of it here in North America. And if that's the case, then the same thing's going to happen where a lot of these sectors that have been really hammered by the pandemic are going to be coming back, you know, in a big way. And conversely, a lot of these stocks and sectors that have benefited dramatically, think of all the like the lockdown stocks that have benefited from the pandemic. You might think of Netflix, Peloton, you know, selling tons of bikes to people who can't go to the gym anymore. Zoom, obviously, you know, it's amazing to me that Zoom, as Lee Gehring pointed out on my podcast this week, Zoom and ExxonMobil trade at the same market cap, $140 billion. Zoom trades at 100 times sales. ExxonMobil trades at, you know, a little bit more than one half times its sales. And so I think you're going to see that, you know, those two stocks might be exemplify what I see coming better than anything, which is we're going to rotate out of these pandemic stocks, these lockdown stocks, and into the things like energy that have been hammered the hardest.
So stuff that we will actually use when, I guess, people get back to some sort of normal life. But Jesse, do you think that people in North America, after living through what really is one of the first pandemics in a long time, that they are going to come back to what they used to do and to travel and to really get out as much as they used to?
I think there's going to be actually pent-up demand for a lot of those things. I think once it's clear that it's safe to go to a concert again, to go travel again, I think that there's going to be a lot of, you know, 2 years of pent-up demand for those things, and it's going to just explode once people know that it's safe to go do that again. People really do, you know, aren't going to stop traveling. People, you know, might not go back to the movie theaters like they used to, but, you know, people are going to go back to concerts and things like that because they've just missed that for the last, you know, year. And by then, you know, 2 years plus. So I do think there's going to be a lot of pent-up demand. Most things are going to, I mean, look at how many people were still signing up to go on cruises when the pandemic was in full force. So you imagine once we're given the all clear signal, you know, the demand to get back on a cruise ship is going to be huge. So I think, you know, the demand for those things is there. It's just, you know, it's being suppressed. But like I said, the market is going to start discounting those things today. The market's not going to wait until we have the all clear signal for people to go back and do those things, for those stock prices to start really rebounding. And to me, energy is the most, you know, interesting of all those, because it has become so, it's the most hated sector in the market right now. And probably, like my friend Jason Gefford's pointed out, might be the most hated sector of all time.
Hey, fair enough. You look at what has happened in energy. Yes, it's been in a downtrend. But what about that balance of the moves, the skyrocketing moves that we've seen in clean energy and solar ETFs?
Yeah, I see. You know, another good example of that is, you know, I think it's NextEra, you know, big alternative energy company, just passed ExxonMobil in terms of market cap, even though, you know, the revenues, you know, and profitability historically and stuff is just so much huger in Exxon's favor. But that's a perfect sentiment signal. There's so many sentiment signals right now that to me are the types of signals that you see at major turning points. I mean, I think back to me, the oil stocks today remind me so much of the gold mining stocks 5 years ago in 2015, when gold was the most hated asset class on the planet. And you could buy the miner stocks at, you know, less than 50% of their liquidation value. I remember looking at New Gold and Gold Corp and these things, and they're trading at less than 50 cents on the dollar on their liquidation value. There's a lot of energy stocks that, you know, are essentially trading at very similar valuations. And it's because of the widespread antipathy towards them. You know, back then we saw the Wall Street Journal call gold a pet rock. The Economist recently asked, is this the end of the oil age? And it's almost the exact identical story or headline that they ran in October of 2003, literally right before oil went from $30 to $150 a barrel over the next few years. So when you see this type of sentiment, it's, to me, it's a screaming buy signal. We also, I mean, another good example is, you know, we look back at, what was it, the dollar. You know, back in 2007, early 2008, some people might remember, you know, Gisele Bündchen, the famous Brazilian model, saying, I won't be paid in dollars anymore. Jay-Z, same thing. I only accept euros. The hatred for the dollar had gotten so extreme because the dollar had, you know, fallen from its 2002 peak to 2007. It had fallen, you know, like 40% or something. And so when trends get that obvious, where you have celebrities saying, I won't take dollars anymore, it's a screaming buy signal. And, you know, Justin Bieber's latest music video, he plays, there's like a whole section in the middle of the song where he's, you know, like acting as if he is a worker at an oil field getting laid off. So you have, you know, back in 2007, you have Jay-Z, you know, like flashing euros in his music video instead of dollars. Same thing. Bieber today is, you know, saying basically the oil sector is synonymous with pain and suffering. And to me, it's a screaming buy signal.
So then where are you focused in terms of oil companies? Is it the producers? Is it the pipelines? Where is the sweet spot in your eyes?
It's really both of those. I like the oil and gas, the exploration production companies. I think they are, you know, some of the cheapest in the sector right now, just because they're so highly leveraged to the oil price. And everybody thinks oil is dead. Everybody thinks oil is never going to go back up again. And, you know, there's a supply and demand case to be made that we actually could see another energy crisis over the next, you know, over the next several years. And so if that's the case, oil price is going way back up, you know, potentially back over $100 a barrel. And the oil and gas producers are going to be the ones to benefit most from that. But also, you know, you're right about the infrastructure companies, the pipeline companies. These things, a lot of them are paying, you know, 8-10% dividends and higher. And those are sustainable dividends. It's amazing to me that in a 0% interest rate environment, nobody, you know, people are shunning this 8-10% of, you know, sustainable income from a lot of these stocks. And, you know, by the same token, in terms of the whole energy sector, it's incredibly ironic to me that we have a Federal Reserve that is literally decided, dedicated to creating inflation. It's essentially the opposite of Paul Volcker 40 years ago saying, I'm going to break the back of inflation no matter what it takes. We have Jay Powell saying, I'm going to create inflation no matter what it takes. And what's the best way to protect yourself against inflation? It's commodity stocks. And the oil stock is the most hated sector on the planet at a time when you have the most powerful central bank in the world saying they're going to create inflation. So it's just, to me, a screaming opportunity.
All right. Well, hey, Jesse, always interesting comments and a bit of a divergence from some of the other stuff that we usually talk about. But one other question, though, you have a timeline here of 18 months. You said spring of 2022. That's a long time for investors and a lot of people. They're looking for returns now. So how are you balancing that timing aspect?
Well, that's my point is so the, you know, the market is going to start discounting today what the world will look like 18 months from now. That comes back to that Druckenmiller quote that I was pointing out. Is if you invest in the present, you're going to get run over. The market right now is pricing in the pandemic will last forever. That's why you see stocks like Netflix and Peloton and these things. And a lot of these, to be perfectly frank, I'm short a lot of these stocks right now because I do think the market's going to start discounting. People getting back to normal. We're going to be avoiding Zoom calls as much as possible and doing things in person as much as possible as we can, 18 months from now, just because we're tired of being, doing things virtually and being locked down. So to say that 18 months from now is when the returns are going to happen is, I think, dead wrong. The market's going to start discounting these things today, what the world's going to look like 18 months from now.
All right. Hey, Jesse, great chatting with you. Thank you again for taking some time on this weekend show. And just a little food for thought, everyone who thinks that this restart just isn't going to happen, or you know what, it will take some time. But yeah, that pent up demand, you have a good point that people do want to get back out. So when they feel safe to, when they're able to, man, that stuff could really take off. Jesse, thanks for your time this weekend. Have a great rest of your weekend.
You too, Corey. Thanks. Always a pleasure.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Continuing to listen to the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed that first segment with Jesse Felder. In this segment, I am featuring Mike Larson, editor of the Safe Money Report. Mike's joined me on a number of occasions, talking broad markets, talking some of the sectors that he is focused on. But we are spending this first hour of the show talking more broad concepts when it comes to investors. And in this segment, we're going to talk a bit more about money printing, money flows, but mostly money printing ever since COVID hit. Look, all central banks, all governments have just slammed down on the gas pedal, issuing money, trying to get the economy in some sort of stable fashion and trying to get some of that money down to individuals. The U.S., we're stuck a little bit right now in terms of getting anything through the government, but we even heard this week from the Fed minutes that, look, the Fed is willing and ready to inject more money into the system. Mike, give us, first and foremost, a little summary of all the money printing that has happened all on the back of COVID.
Sure. I mean, I've kind of tongue-in-cheek dubbed this the money flood 2021. Kind of, the big picture here being that in the wake of the COVID outbreak, we've seen the Federal Reserve print essentially the most money in the shortest amount of time that we've ever seen in the history of this country, even more so than we had in the wake of the great financial crisis back in 07 and 08 and 09. And what's noteworthy, too, is they've rolled out of all these programs which are buying and backstopping a wide range of assets, everything from municipal debt to junk bond to junk bond ETFs to corporate debt and investment grade corporate debt and on and on. You get this alphabet soup of programs that are being used to backstop Wall Street And at first, you also had that accompanied by a large dose of fiscal aid that did actually make its way down to Main Street. Things like stimulus checks of up to $1,200 per household. Things like unemployment added benefits of up to $600 on top of what the states pay here in the U.S. But unfortunately, while the Wall Street aid has continued to come fast and furious, and there's no indication whatsoever that's going to let up, and that money, if anything, there's going to be more coming, which we can talk about in a second, Main Street aid has started to dry up. Those unemployment benefits, extra unemployment benefits, the money funding them has run out. The money behind the stimulus checks, all that money's either been spent or saved by this point. There's no new checks coming out. And because of a combination of two things, mostly squabbling out of the U.S. election, which is coming up, and also the fact that the Fed's money printing and market backstopping has neutered market forcing mechanisms, meaning you don't have extremely turbulent markets, falling stock prices, high volatility, and so on, forcing Congress to act and saying, look, we've got to do something to stop this. Because you don't have that due to all the Fed intervention, you're not getting the fiscal intervention. Congress and the Trump administration is just looking at the stock market and saying, well, Main Street doesn't need money. The stock market's doing fine. It's dangerous thinking. It's bad for Main Street. But as long as Wall Street's throwing a party, Main Street's going to continue to get the shaft. It's unfortunate. It's not the way I wish things were. But as investors, you have to invest for the world that you in the market environment that you have in the real world, not the one you want potentially due to your own personal preferences in an ideal world. And that's sort of where things stand. Again, so much money is being thrown at the markets, so much efforts being expended by the Fed in the U.S. and by the ECB and so on overseas to prop up markets and assets that as an investor, you don't want to stand in the way of that. You really have to position yourself to profit from the money flood and just let it carry you along. And that's kind of where we are. You know, what's next? Obviously, the next big catalyst is the election coming up, and there are a couple of ways this thing could break. But either if Trump somehow manages to win and he's down in the polls, or especially if Biden wins and the Democrats sweep in Congress, we're going to see a heck of a lot of additional aid, additional borrowing and spending that's going to go on at all levels of government to try and get the economy up and running. Things like infrastructure, things like tax cuts, things like additional, funding, mailing of checks and stimulus money to Main Street and so on. So there's a lot of ways this thing could break. None of what I see, though, is really bad for assets, even if it's not great for Main Street. So again, that's how you have to position yourself in terms of owning assets, which means high quality, dividend paying, secure, highly rated stocks, as well as things like gold, silver, and precious metals miners.
So, Mike, what about how the U.S. election plays out? I think we can both agree that there will be a lot of money printing after the election is over, but does it impact where you think that money will land, depending on if Trump gets in or depending on if Biden and this blue wave actually happens?
Yeah, you're absolutely right that this thing could go in a couple of different ways. I mean, let's be honest, regardless of your other opinions about Trump, a lot of the aid, things like tax cuts and so on, exhorting of the Fed to continue to keep rates low and so on and what have you, all of that or most of that has benefited the upper tier, the wealthiest, the one percenters, if you want to use that term, or, just people who own assets and those at the higher end of the income spectrum have disproportionately benefited from the tax cuts and from other things being done to support asset values. If we see a blue sweep, if we see Biden get elected, we see the Democrats take a majority in both sides of Congress, House, and the Senate, and so on, then you would likely see more borrowing and spending being directed towards middle America and towards things like infrastructure and so on. It's a question to me. I mean, whereas a lot of the polling suggests Biden's going to win, it's unclear yet if that's going to persist through Election Day, and it's also unclear if that congressional sweep is going to happen. So, a lot of different ways this thing could break. But in any event, I don't see any scenario where you're going to see fiscal responsibility or monetary policy responsibility magically start to happen, right? Nobody's running on a platform of fiscal restraint, or nobody's arguing for the Fed to keep, start raising interest rates sometime before the 2030s and what have you. So that part of it is almost guaranteed to be coming down the pike. It's just a question of who exactly will be the winners and losers, but there will be a lot of money printing either way, so that's what you probably should be positioning for as an investor.
Yeah, fair enough, right? This money printing, it is not going anywhere. If anything, it's only going to pick up steam. And this election in the U.S. and even the election that was just called in B.C. in Canada, where I live, everyone is promising the world. They're promising lower taxes. They're promising all this spending. It's not all going to come to fruition, but that is the trend we are going down. Mike, how important, though, is it to compare what the U.S. might do, either from the Fed or from a government standpoint, compared to the rest of the world, in China, in Europe, in any other country you want to look at?
Well, I think on a monetary stimulus side, the rest of the world is pretty much on the same page as the U.S. Fed. I mean, you know, the ECB, Lagarde over there is talking about potentially cutting rates further into negative territory, buying even more bonds. Here in the U.S., they're starting to float sort of a trial balloon and talking a little bit about doing more QE here. And if they do QE, shift more purchases towards the long end of the yield curve, buy more 10-year, 30-year debt, and so on to suppress long-term interest rates. In Japan, I mean, they've been at it for decades now. So I think from a monetary standpoint, there's no hard money advocates. There's no monetary responsibility. There's no, you know, those who worry accurately and correctly about the potential for creating even more asset bubbles, those few voices are being drowned out. So on a monetary side, pretty much everybody's rowing in the same direction. On a fiscal side, in parts of Europe and other places, you actually see a better mix where more aid is being directed at the unemployed. It's being directed at Main Street. Things like, you know, if you have your hours cut, the government will kind of help make up the difference between what you would have earned if you were working a full work week and what you are earning if you're working, you know, two-thirds of a week or half a week or something. So those are the kinds of things that are being more directed at Main Street, and that's the aid that's dropped off the map, so to speak, here in the U.S. Again, we all started, you know, with the stimulus checks to Main Street and PPP loans and things like that, but those programs are running out, and you're left with just the candy for Wall Street and for the rich, which is again, you know, is it the way things should be? Not in my opinion. Is it the way things are? Yes. And that's what you have to, you know, handle and approach and invest with as an investor.
So are there any certain sectors, markets, ETFs that you are going to be watching most closely to give you a little hint in terms of what sectors will benefit the most?
Sure. I think, you know, you have seen a little mini rotation in the last couple of weeks into a little bit out of the grow at any cost tech type names that were leading the market and into some of the broader based smaller cap stocks to a certain degree, financials, industrial, things like that. Basically, and part of that is the optimism that, you know, Biden's going to win and he's going to hopefully have a little more control in Congress. And that results in more spending on Main Street, on infrastructure, on things like that. So you have seen a little mini rotation in the last few weeks. It's really, though, going to come down to, you know, how the election results shake out, whether Biden, if he wins, is truly going to get a mandate, a powerful mandate to push things through Congress, or if there's still going to be enough Republican pushback that it really isn't going to, you know, own or control both houses of Congress as well as the presidency. So people are trying to position in advance. But again, if that truly is the case and you aren't pre-positioned for it on, you know, the day after the election, I think that's okay. You might miss the first few percentage points or you might miss a rotation or you might miss the first few percentage points in market performance overall. But if this is going to be a quote unquote blue wave, you'll have months and months and quarters to participate. And it should be, you know, it should lead to a little more of that broadening out of the market rally. So I don't think you really want to be jumping the gun yet as an investor. As for other things you can continue to focus on, in the Safe Money Report, there are some steady eddy type sectors, higher yielding kind of companies and things like, you know, consumer staples, utilities, even some of the bigger fast food and retail companies that have taken market share from smaller firms. Those are the kinds of names I've been focused on, and I still like them regardless of what happens after the election. And of course, as we've talked before, again, precious metals, the mining sector, still think there's a lot of opportunity there. Still think we're only in the fourth or fifth inning. So I would definitely, regardless of who wins in a few weeks, I would definitely still be looking for opportunity there.
All right. Hey, Mike, great chatting with you. Thanks for sharing your thoughts and I think a very good understanding of what is to come in terms of more money printing and where that money should land. It's a different world, a lot of similarities to the money printing that's happened before, but with the economy taking that hit earlier on and still struggling to get back to normal, man, oh man, there's going to need to be a lot of money printed just to even bandage some of those holes and some of those businesses that really took a beating. Mike, thanks for your time 100%. Today, buddy. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report and continuing our focus a bit more broadly on markets. I am chatting with Chris Temple, founder and editor of the National Investor. Now, Chris, what I want to do with you here is look ahead, almost past the election, and weigh how the different outcomes of this U.S. election could impact different sectors. First, we'll start off with the broad averages. Now, whether we have a Trump victory or a Biden victory or a flat-out blue wave that just sweeps the election, I think we can expect different policies from the government, which will carry over to different market reactions. Now, some things will be the same, but I think there most likely will be some pretty key differences and some key sector winners then. Chris, give us a little synopsis. First and foremost, in terms of U.S. markets, how these different outcomes will play into trading moves, please.
Well, look, as far as the stock market generally, I've got a commentary that's actually from my upcoming issue this weekend that I'm going to share with the broader public, put on my website this weekend, that will actually have a link as well to both this conversation as well as the one I did earlier in the week with our mutual friend Trevor Hall. But the big picture, Corey, is that neither Donald Trump nor Joe Biden is Fed chairman. And who the Fed chairman is and what the Fed policy is, as always, is the biggest driver of several for what's going to happen in the markets. And we know that that pretty much is full speed ahead. Secondly, as I'll be writing, you know, when you get right down to it, despite the often hysterical and very polarized left versus right, Trump versus Biden thing that goes on here, there's not going to be a great deal in a broad sense that's going to change, unless, of course, the Democrats sweep everything. Then you will see Biden, who will govern as the establishment man and centrist that he's been for half a century, nearly. Not this left-wing kook that the Trump campaign ads make him out to be necessarily. You're not going to see a whole lot change. Some things will at the margins, some industries will be doing better, some worse, but the big picture is not going to change. And frankly, what I'm seeing more and more in recent days is that the stock market will be overjoyed, not if Trump wins versus Biden, but if we get to the morning after Election Day, and even though there will still be balanced account, we have a decisive winner. That seems to be occupying the markets as much as who is going to win. And whether anybody likes it or agrees with it or not, the idea may not happen. We'll find out. But at least for now, the idea that Biden is going to win by a decisive enough margin so as not to have a protracted struggle is making the stock market happy, all else being equal.
That is fair. But what, you think a Trump victory, or at least if Trump started to take the lead in the polls, that would cause this uncertainty? Would that be simply because maybe we won't have a sweep in terms of one party leading both factions of government?
Well, that might happen. Well, it remains to be seen. What the market will not respond well to is if we have after Election Day, and I still lean this way personally, though we don't know yet what's going to happen until it does. But if the market sees that we're going to have a number of days or weeks where there is a photo finish, both sides claim victory, both sides sue the other side, we have more civil unrest, we have more indecision as far as what's going to happen because of all of that stuff with any near-term help as far as fiscal measures. All of those things, Corey, are going to upset the apple cart. But right now, you've got so much liquidity, so much hopium, so much of an attitude that even if you do have competing headlines, today we're going to have a stimulus. No, we're not going to have stimulus after all. We're going to do a piecemeal. Well, okay, we're going to do a piecemeal, but that piecemeal has got to be part of an ultimately larger plan. It's all becoming just partisan noise that the market is looking past. Again, they may be proven wrong. It may be too overly optimistic, but right now it doesn't matter. Everybody seems to believe that whether it's now, next week, after the election, after the administration comes in, we're going to get massive fiscal stimulus at some point. And nobody is willing to bet against that right now.
Fair enough, though, right? Don't you think we are going to get massive fiscal stimulus no matter who gets
in?
It just might be directed at different areas?
Yeah, I mean, the only difference is, as I alluded to, and as you just suggested, are going to be some industries will do better than others. You know, if you have Biden win, you will see, for instance, a little bit more of an aggressive push in the direction of subsidies and policies that will encourage electric vehicle and battery production and, you know, the production and refining and whatnot of those things within our own borders needed for all of that. Not that that's not going to happen under President Trump, and not that it isn't happening under President Trump. It is. But you would see more emphasis on those and a de-emphasis on fossil fuels. One of the things I would dearly love to be able to tell people to do right now is to buy some of the pipelines, the MLPs, the integrated energy companies that they pop one day and give it right back the next. You don't know which direction things are going to go. If you had this blue wave, just for sake of discussion, on Election Day, and the Democrats get the House and the Senate, as well as Biden winning the presidency, I don't care how cheap some of these good companies, the integrated oil companies, the Exxons, the Chevrons, the BPs, the master limited partnerships, the refiners, they're cheap now, they'll get a whole lot cheaper. And I hope they get really annihilated, because after they do, I'd be telling people to buy them. But very definitely, if Joe Biden has both a Democrat House and a Democrat Senate that he's got to be dealing with, he will be pulled to some extent to the left on those things when, if he has, just again for sake of discussion, Republican Senate that he still has to deal with, he will, you know, be governing, quote, from the middle.
Okay. But I guess that whole thing is undoubtedly, or it seems like some of those stocks could get hit if that blue wave comes in. Even if Biden does get pulled a little bit more into the center, then they could bounce back. Do you think that's why we've seen this massive run in clean energy and solar energy ETFs recently, is because of this bit more expectation that there might be a blue wave?
Oh, of course. I think that goes without saying that you've got people sniffing that kind of an outcome out. So those sectors are rallying. I think for some of them, it's a little bit ridiculous fundamentally. But hey, so is the market generally when you look at different stuff. I mean, yesterday, just to give you an example about how goofy things can be when you've got too much money out there and people with more money than brains, and today this is what our scenario is, and they throw away some money at it. One of the stocks on my recommended list, Corey, the symbol is AGE on a New York Stock Exchange. I looked at it Wednesday afternoon, it's 80 cents. Yesterday morning, it's nearly $4. Hit the open. It traded over 300 million shares on the day when it only has a little under 40 million shares outstanding. No news, no nothing. As it turns out, Somebody on this new Robinhood trading platform decided to pump it and talk about it. And this particular player on Robinhood's got several thousand people to follow, and everybody just went crazy. And I was looking at some of the chats afterward. Somebody saying, well, they bought it too late. They saw it running and bought it. Now they've lost thousands of dollars. And this person, like most of them buying it, has utterly no idea what the company even does. They're just chasing the momentum and the noise. That's the whole market today, to one extent or another. So, you know, yeah, thematically, does it make sense that some of the green energy stocks and so forth are going to do well? Of course it does. Solar is a stretch still, especially with some of the valuations there, because solar, unlike nuclear energy, unlike the theme with the electric vehicle industry, as it rapidly is moving to a place where it's going to be economical, there's just not the substance there, with, in my opinion, at least with solar, there never has been.
Okay. Hey, fair enough. Just a quick comment regarding these Robinhood traders. I think no matter who wins, there will be spending packages that put more money in individuals' pockets. Does that mean we are now, for the foreseeable future, we don't know how long these spending packages will last, but that we are going to be living in an environment where Robinhood traders can move stocks that much?
Well, at least in this case they did, but individual stocks, yes. I mean, you know, it's... And this gets into more nuances over the whole regulatory system too, though, Corey, because if you had, and again, we're just talking out loud, we're just trying to put on our, you know, different game theories of what the probabilities is of any number of things, depending on the election outcome. One of the things that would be negative if you had a Democrat sweep is that you would see revived efforts to have everything from what has been known for years in academic circles as a Tobin tax, where there would be taxes on transactions relating to stocks and to Wall Street, could come in any number of forms. That is one of the pet projects and on the wish list of the far left and the social justice warriors and whatnot, the class warriors. Something that I have to admit, I am not 100% opposed to if it was done in the right way. This speaks more to the very nature of our system, however, where the fractional reserve system and the casino that Wall Street has been made that enables it, they kind of reinforce one another. You know, this has led to the stratification of wealth in our society. So, yeah, the Robin Hood platforms are nice, and at least in that sense, supposed to be, you know, democratic and open up trading to the little guy, but there's a lot of risks involved there. So I would not put it past the government, if you had everything in Democrat Party hands, to throttle a lot of this activity, which in one sense morally makes sense, because some of this silliness in trading shouldn't be happening. We should be basing things on fundamentals and on real world economic activity, but it could throw the stock market and a lot of these trading platforms for a loop. So that's one of the outliers out there that most people aren't understanding or talking about, but it's something that's possible, that you could see a halt put to a lot of the goofier trading and trading regimens out there if you had the Democrat Party sweep, and that would not be good in some ways.
All right, let's move on to another sector, actually two sectors that are pretty related here. We'll talk about the U.S. dollar, which is continuing to fade here, had that little bit of a bounce, and the precious metals. Gold had a good end to the week, but when it comes to the different outcomes for the dollar and precious metals, how do you see it playing out depending on who gets in?
Well, I'll tell you, the dollar in recent days, especially after it made that rounding bottom, that inverse head and shoulders within it, classic breakout, and it just died. It just ran out of gas. And, two problems with the dollar's rally. Problem number one, technically it ran out of gas. But fundamentally, again, the mindset of the market for the moment is that, number one, everything is going to be held together by the Fed. We're going to get fiscal stimulus later. So there is utterly no risk-off trade to help support the U.S. dollar right now. That what little bit of that we had a few weeks back, that's a distant memory now for the market. The other thing more fundamentally is the market is looking at it is that whatever the outcome of the election, and especially if Biden wins and a Democrat sweep, right or wrong, everybody says that is going to translate into a weaker dollar because you'll have even bigger deficits than we have right now, more fiscal spending, a weaker economy, the Fed, on hold with interest rate policies until the Indians win the World Series, like I quipped a while ago, we can't use the Cubs anymore. So now it's the Cleveland Indians who are the longest team, without a World Series win. And that's going to continue to put downward pressure on the dollar. So as you and I are recording this, we're just about at, if not slightly below, the level at which the dollar index broke out, which is about 93 and a third or so on the dollar index, 93 and a third to 93 and a half. If we break below that, then you open up the downside again for the U.S. dollar, and it's not a coincidence that as that is happening, gold is about to break above where its resistance has been lately, around 1925. If you had a strong close above that, then gold all of a sudden has a chance to go right back higher, and maybe even between now and Election Day challenge the old highs. We'll see. So technically, very, very important points for both the dollar and gold.
All right. One final question that I want you to answer here, Chris, deals with tech companies. We keep on hearing murmurs of the government going after these tech companies, splitting up big tech. Do you think the Democrats go after tech much harder if they get in, if there is a blue wave?
If there's a Democrat sweep, no question about it. The Republicans, by and large, even though both parties, and keep in mind, they're both, we're talking about establishment party A and establishment party B. So you have to understand that the majority of what you hear on most anything is a scripted circus for our consumption, and people see that on in other segments on this website. I won't mention any names, but you have a scripted left versus right circus. So look, the Republicans on the Judiciary Committee that came out with their report early this last week on Facebook, Amazon, Apple, and Google, they don't want to go as far as to break up those companies, require the breakup, as the government did once upon a time with the old Ma Bell telephone company. If you get a Democrat sweep, there will be an effort to break up the four of those. So that would be something that people would have to understand as a risk with those companies specifically, and maybe with the broader NASDAQ generally. And it's one of the reasons why, despite how everything looks like it just wants to continue this across the board melt up and, just party on, nothing to worry about. If you did have a Democrat sweep and people started to digest the implications of that, you could get that first brief sharp correction in stocks, especially in the tech stocks led by those, big names going down, before you had a resumption of the broader move up, which would probably, if we get a Democrat sweep, you'd want to favor the cyclicals, the industrial metals, infrastructure, and that type of thing.
All right, Chris, we'll leave it there. Thanks for that more or less comprehensive update on some of the major markets that could be impacted and some of the differences we are going to see depending on who gets in. But it's going to be messy until we get to that time, and potentially, I think, very likely to be messy even after the election with either party fighting it, particularly Trump, if he is going to hold true to some of his threats he's made if he does not get reelected. But we'll see how it all plays out. We are going to be slaves to the news and headlines up until that time. Chris, great chatting with you. Thanks again for your time. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. Alright, here we are wrapping up the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. In this final segment, I wanted to highlight some major news that came out of a company that we have followed on the website for a while now, Maple Gold Mines. I posted this interview back on Thursday when the news first broke of the JV that just happened with Agnico Eagle. In this segment, I am replaying that segment. It is a longer interview, so everybody on the weekend show, please visit our website, kereport.com, and click on the weekend show posting for the full interview. Hey, everyone. Welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, we are getting an update from Maple Gold Mines, traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol MGM and on the OTCQB under the symbol MGMLF. I'm chatting with the president and CEO, Matthew Horner, as well as the VP of Exploration, Fred Spiedel. Now, guys, we have a very significant news release to cover off here that was just released this morning. It's a transaction with Agnico Eagle, a JV that has a couple moving parts to it. There is a contribution from Agnico Eagle in terms of funds and also a past producing mine that is directly to the south of the Douay Gold Project. Now, I will post a link to the press release, but Matthew, let's get you on first. Please explain some of the nuances of this deal when it comes to financing and now this JV between Maple and Agnico Eagle, please.
Yeah, happy to do so. We're very excited about welcoming Agnico Eagle, the number one gold producer in Quebec, as our strategic partner. It is due mostly to the hard effort of Dr. Fred Spiedel, who's on the line with us and driving this project so perfectly as he has been and getting his arms around the geology and the way he has done. So my hat's off to him and the rest of the team. We've been working with Agnico Eagle and others who have come to site and looked at the geology for 18 months at least. And so this is not a project or a deal that's been consummated overnight. That should be noted. And I'll go through the terms. I think this news is already out now in the market, so people can read about this on their own if they have an interest of doing so. But these guys are the project operators with Yamana at Canadian Malartic. Malartic was a restart of an old mine that in its day, before it got restarted, no one ever thought was going to work. Joutel is a project that they're contributing to the joint venture, which we have a binding term sheet, which we announced today, that establishes that we will contribute the Douay project and they will contribute Joutel into this joint venture. That project was a past producer. It produced over 1 million ounces. The grades were, I believe, upwards of 6 grams. And they shut down in a price environment of about $300 gold in the 90s. There are three areas of production. I'll let Fred speak to that in a minute. And we think there was a lot left behind there, and we're really excited about looking closer at that, getting all the information digitized, and getting our arms around that and getting after it sometime in 2021. So that's their contribution of a project into this joint venture. In addition to that, they are making a strategic investment into Maple Gold at the corporate level at a significant premium. I think it's almost 50% premium to our 20-day or 30-day VWAP, and at 100% premium on the warrant that we're giving them to get to 19.9%. It's a 3-year warrant that has acceleration clauses after 2 years. So that's what's happening as a strategic investment into our company to get as a sign of confidence in us and what we're doing. And in addition, they're going to be contributing $18 million over 4 years in exploration that'll go directly into the ground. They're contributing their technical expertise as through their joint operatorship of the joint venture. Fred Spiedel will be the general manager of the joint venture. Both companies get to retain an NSR, 2% NSR, in the projects that they're contributing to the joint venture, which gives credit for the ounces that we have already established at Douay in the inferred category. And there's a $40 million price tag to associate with buying that out. So we're holding back that credit for our shareholders that have stuck with us up until this point.
On top of that, there's project finance support that they're going to be providing to us down the road, so that as once we get, and we expect to get it in what X number of years, to the point where we can move forward with development, we're going to have a strong partner sitting next to us, shoulder to shoulder, in front of the project finance partners and the capital markets, et cetera, to help us actually get underway and start doing some things, as we are the smaller party, of course, in this transaction. So those are the main points. I think I can mention that after after we've completed the closing of the initial strategic financing, our picture changes from today, where we have $6.5 million or so in the treasury, to after this closes, we'll have just under $13 million in the treasury and $18 million going into the ground. So we go from $6.5 million to almost $31 million overnight. And I think we have also established the best partner, I believe, on planet Earth for us to be working with to drive both of these projects forward. They know more about Quebec and the Abitibi and producing gold than literally anybody else, because they're the largest producer there and they've been in the area for so long. I'm more than overjoyed that we've been finally able to get a project partner in there like them. They would be considered our dream date at the dance, so to speak, because of all the things I mentioned. And now it's just a matter of getting on with it and letting her rip.
Yeah, we'll get to Fred soon. But Matthew, it's clear that you're excited about this deal, and I understand why. This really does, I think, remove a lot of doubt that was in some investors' and analysts' eyes when it came to the Douay project, because of the fact there wasn't a major on site when you already had a fairly nice resource. Can you discuss, again, this high-level concept of having a major now putting money into the project, but also contributing a project that is immediately adjacent to the Douay project? What does this mean for potential scale and size?
Well, as I've said a number of times in other interviews, this has been the game plan from the day I started. We had Japanese parties that I'd known for a long time that were at the table, you know, a couple of years ago, but it wasn't right at the time to go forward with them. But I've always maintained that the best way forward for this project is to have somebody who knows how to build mines up there and has the balance sheet, et cetera, to be our partners. It's what this project has always needed. And I believe that now, given their knowledge base and now voting with their checkbook, that they believe in not just us, but the project, I believe the hearts and minds of the investor community should change quickly and rapidly, and will change as a result. So this is what it needed from the beginning. This is what we've been working, what I've been working on since day one. It's a team effort, and we're overjoyed that it's come together in this fashion.
All right, Fred, let's bring you into this conversation, because I want to first just get your thoughts on this project that Agnico Eagle is contributing, the Zitel project. I understand it's made up of a number of different deposits, three deposits. It was in production, but that was stopped a couple decades ago. Can you share with us some of your insights on this new project to the JV?
It's pretty exciting for us to be able to combine two series of deposits into the same project. And, you know, as many people will tell you, there's no better place to look for new deposits than in the shadow of a headframe, or where a headframe used to be. And I think that's the situation at Eagle's Hell Belt. So basically there's three deposits that are aligned, so they're on the same structure. And you have a progressive deepening of the mineralization towards the southeast. So at the northwest end, we have a small open pit, and then we have two deposit areas that were accessed underground. And so that's all been rehabbed. But keeping in mind that at the time of closure of the mine in 1993, price of gold was around $360, and the cutoffs that would have been used would have been very much higher than the cutoffs that one might use today. So it's important to note, therefore, that the exploration potential on the Eagle Tabel or Joutel property, if you wish, is significant in two ways. One is additional resources around and down plunge of what was exploited in the past. And I think
just even a preliminary look at the data shows that the downplunge continuity is very much open to depth. That's a common theme in Abitibi gold deposits, in the sense that historically production was, you know, in the upper reaches. Additional exploration showed that these things carry on for a long time, down plunge or down the dip. There's a number of good examples of that. So I think there's very good potential to define additional resources around the past producing areas. But beyond that, to the east of the Eagle Tail Bell mine, there's one branch of the deformation zone, which is called the Joutel deformation zone, that has not had a whole lot of exploration. So there's quite a lot of potential there. There are some historical holes that have given some interesting gold intercepts. And a recent review of some of the core from down there showed that there are, as is also the case at Douay, multiple styles of mineralization along that structure. And that structure, which is called the Joutel deformation zone, then swings back up to the north onto the Douay property, where it has had no historical drilling whatsoever. So I think there's lots of potential, not only on the Joutel property itself, but what the geological implications are in terms of understanding what the story is in general for the distribution of gold on the property. So we're pretty excited about, you know, looking at targets at that scale, and in particular, of course, to be able to bring our minds together between Maple Gold and Agnico Eagle and grow the deposits, not just by expanding what we already have at Douay, but by finding new systems on the Joutel property.
Now, because this deal also eliminates really any financing risk for at least 4 years, with a funding minimum of $18 million over those 4 years, plus puts even more money in the Maple Gold's bank account. Fred, what do you see in terms of work and exploration happening at Douay to continue to move that project forward now with Agnico Eagle as a partner?
Yeah, I think it's very important to point out that the this transaction provides for significant continuity from year to year. And so that it allows us to do more long-range planning than has been possible with, you know, in the current market conditions, where you never really know how the financing is going to work out. So with regard to the Douay property itself, Agnico are very, very interested in the exploration potential on there. And, you know, the main reason that I joined the company originally was precisely because, in addition to having a significant gold resource, it also was very significant exploration potential. And I would say that, if anything, at this point in time, compared to when I, you know, first started with the company, even though we've tested a number of targets and actually come up with some discoveries, notably in the Nico Zone and 5C1 area, we still have more target areas to test now than we had, you know, a couple of years ago. And some of those targets that we're talking about, they're pretty major in scale. And so we're talking about, you know, infill and short distance step out drilling around the existing resource, but we're also talking about longer distance step outs in areas that have seen very little drilling before. Basically, that approach has allowed us to make new discoveries, notably in 2018 and 2019 drilling. And then beyond that, we also have, I would call that discovery drilling, you know, up to a couple, 2 to 4 kilometers away from the current resource, but along, you know, similar geological packages or similar structural trends. One notable example being the Northeast IP target, where we plan to do some drilling later this fall. So again, to repeat, there's by analogy with the Joutel property itself, there's a near resource or near mine potential that's significant, and then there's a step out potential, and then there's discovery potential. And basically, we will be moving all three of those forward as part of this JV arrangement with Agnico.
All right, Matthew, I'm going to throw it over to you for a final comment. Just so everyone knows, I am a shareholder of Maple Gold, so to me, this is a very exciting transaction that really helps to tick off a lot of boxes that I know some of my listeners were even sending me, saying, well, what about the financing risk? What are they going to do to keep moving this company and project forward? Now it's a lot more of a comprehensive picture. So please just give us a little summary of how much this does change the company and the future plans.
Well, first of all, lucky you for being a shareholder. I think that I applaud all the people, and I thank everyone for being shareholders and supporters up until this point. This is transformational in every way. We have a platform now with an established maybe the best partner you could ask for. I believe that the best partner on the planet to help us drive these both these projects forward. We've removed all the financing risk that you could imagine from the corporate end and the project side. We have more incredible targets than you could ever dream of. It's kind of like a kid in a candy shop for Fred to now go after and pick apart and drill this project properly. I think we are a completely different company now, a completely different company. And with that, and with that platform now in place, I think we will have a re-rating, or we should, if people are paying attention and they realize, you know, how difficult and how important this is, when they realize, I should say. And then, you know, we are at liberty to go hunting and go shopping ourselves if we have a currency that is valuable, which I think we will. There are many targets out there and other people that we can pursue and go after and have conversations with. So I think it's just the beginning of building a proper, important, relevant gold platform. Canada's next gold platform, it's starting now with this combination. And I think that if you look no further than the Joutel project and the Eagle Talbell mine, to say that, you know, where did Agnico Eagle start? Well, they started this project. You know, every company starts with one solid project. Goldcorp, Agnico, etc. This is our moment. This is our day. And if you look back on this interview many years from now, I think it'll be quite telling that this is the moment that things finally changed and allowed us to grow to our full potential.
All right, we are going to leave it at that. As I mentioned, I am a shareholder of Maple Gold Mines. If anybody has any follow-up questions for Fred or for Matthew, please email me, fleck@kereport.com. We will continue to follow along and address any questions that come in on the back of this transaction. Guys, I really appreciate your time today. Well done getting this deal done and really transforming the company and alleviating or eliminating a bunch of those risks that were floating around a lot of investors' minds. So Matthew, Fred, thank you again for your time today.
Thank you, Corey.
Thank you.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.